I'm Dr. Rod Berger. Sit back, grab a cup of coffee, and explore some of today's most pressing educational issues through the experienced eyes of leading education personalities. Welcome to Coffeed. Well, John, it's nice to catch up again for our Coffeed here. You know, the other day, and we talked off air about this, but there was a story about, you know, Senate committee looking to fully fund important, you know, IDEA, which was the headline that Schumer was urging the Senate committee to do that. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, at first I saw that and I thought, you know, is this, what is this? Is this sort of like political theater, or are they actually trying to do something? What should the public know about it, John?
Well, I think it's more of political theater. And so for the public, or for the families of children with special needs, when they see a headline like that, it's a perennial. It comes up at least once a year. For as many years as I can remember back, former Senate education chair, it's actually the something like health, education, something, and pensions is the actual committee in the Senate that deals with education. And that was led by Tom Harkin, a longtime Democrat from Iowa, five-term U.S. Senator. And Rod, every year he called for full funding. Every year he called for full funding. He's really a hero, really a liberal's liberal among special educators, and tried and did his best to get the federal government to pay its portion of IDEA, which I think they'd need to throw in another $20 billion or so on an annual basis to do what they said that they would do back in 1975. But unfortunately, Rod, I think it's more political theater than anything else. I don't think Senator Schumer has any more clout than Senator Harkin had, or any more ability to get this done. I don't know why the federal government has never ponied up its portion. It's 40% of special education costs is what it should be. And it has just, it's really been a burden to public schools, districts, state, and local finances to enforce the law and have it paid only at about 15% of costs is paid by federal dollars. I'm not crying an injustice. I'm just saying it was laid upon them. I shouldn't say laid upon them. The federal government wrote a law to make sure that children of all situations, regardless of handicap condition, would have access to public school. And they supposedly were going to fund a significant portion of it, but really funded only a small portion, leaving the remainder on the state and locals. So,
what's the benefit, John? Yeah. How does a cynic look at this? I mean, what is the benefit of sort of only coming at it, not even halfway? I mean, who's benefiting out there? It always seems like in politics, there's always, you know, someone behind the curtain that is benefiting when the general public is looking at it saying, well, wait a minute, you're only covering X percent and it's not even putting a dent in it. I mean, who's motivated to keep it in the way that it is?
Well, I think kind of an obverse of your question, who gets benefit? I think it's politically good theater for elected officials to stand in front of an audience of families with handicapped children or special educators and say, I am advocating for the full funding of IDEA at the federal level. That's good political theater. You get people clap out loud and they believe it, or they want to believe it. So that's good theater. Now, the question is, why don't we fund the additional portion that lays on the backs of? Because I think there's a feeling, Rod, that is implicit, it's not stated, that there's enough money already in American public education at $630 billion, that to add another $20 billion for special needs kids is somehow federal government and the Senate particularly has been able to stave off the political charges of the advocates of special needs children. They've done this just not recently, they've done it for decades. So there's no united front, if you will. There are among special needs advocacy groups. There's an advocacy group for the developmentally delayed an advocacy group, many advocacy groups for children with autism. There's advocacy groups, many advocacy groups for kids with learning disabilities. But they don't have a united front. They can't come and amass, let's say 20 million voters that are prepared to work at the ballot box or constantly protest outside of the Capitol until things are changed. We don't have that type of political unanimity on the special education side. So that's one reason it just hasn't been politically expedient enough. There's not enough pressure. There's not enough horse trading, not a reason to do horse trading and to get the money up where the federal government pledged it. So,
do you ever envision it getting to that level, John, or is this just the reality of what it will probably be for the foreseeable future?
Well, I'd like to be optimistic about it, but I'm not. I don't know why. I don't know what would lead me. Nothing leads me to be optimistic on it, Rod. I hope I'm wrong. I'd love to be wrong on that. But by the same token, the thing that may help, and this is fresh thought right now, is the reauthorization coming up, let's say before 2020, sometime in the next 4 years, sometime after the new president is in. I think Congress is going to have to take up IDEA. It will be several years overdue for reauthorization at that point. Should have been reauthorized in 2014. So if it's anything like ESEA, now ESSA, life goes on under the old law until the new law is tinkered with. So it is maybe at that point, Rod, maybe at that point we can get teeth into the law that will say, okay, we're going to, federal government is going to release not just full funded at the advent of the new law or the advent of the new reauthorization, but maybe we ought to be thinking about writing the release of funding or upping the federal contribution, say, at a rate of 20% over 5 years to where it may be fully funded, with some concomitant standards having been met on the public school district's part, so that special education changes from a compliance-driven law to an outcomes-driven law, so that the lives of children and their families are made better in special education. I think at that reauthorization moment, another way to think it could be fully funded is that I think part of the reason it's not fully funded, Rod, and this, I appreciate these chances to have coffee with you and think about this. When the law was passed originally in 75, written and signed into the law by Gerald Ford, and then came into practice in 1977, it was designed really for a population of about 3 million children who were severely handicapped, children who had been refused admission into public school education because of their disability, because of their mental condition. And then for another million children who were enrolled in public schools who got a very, very marginal education, and I use that word very loosely, who were entertained but who were not trained for jobs, who were not educated to the maximum of their ability or even to the floor of their ability. But what happened shortly after that, by 77, the law was passed, but by the late 70s, 79 to 80, and throughout the 80s, the children who began to receive, more and more children who were learning disabled, who were having reading troubles and math troubles and school phobia and other types of disabilities that the Congress, when they passed the law in 75, had never really considered. So that today, over 50% of the children who are covered under IDEA were not really anticipated to be its beneficiaries in 1975 when the law was passed. So there may be a feeling going forward and historically as well that here we passed this law for the children who are severely developmentally delayed. We passed this law for the children whose emotional state or whose emotional illness made their attendance at traditional public school difficult for the child and for his classmates, because we didn't have facilities or didn't have teachers who knew how to manage that child. But again, what happened is most of the children then are on what I would call the shallow end of the special education pool, kids with reading disabilities and other issues that can be really treated much more in the mainstream, and which are being treated much more in the mainstream through response to intervention. So let me hypothesize, or let me project a little bit now that you're pushing with some good questions, Rod. If we push RTI to ESSA, it has been part of ESEA, and now we'll just put it under ESSA. RTI is not special education. It is in the mainstream. So if we say that since RTI is fairly successfully meeting the needs of lots of kids, not all kids, but we are making progress in keeping kids in the mainstream, then that should begin to move a lot of kids that have the shallower, on the shallower end of the disabilities pool, out of special education and into mainstream education. And if I think if we could do that, yet not change the funding on special education at the federal level, we might be pretty close to full federal funding, if you follow my logic. And there are a lot of voices in the research I'm doing right now that are saying, both from the theoretical, not theoretical, but from the research front and from the policy front, good, thorough, nationally reputable professors are saying, when IDEA is reauthorized, they fully expect that kids with learning disabilities are not going to make the cut. They're going to be declared no longer special ed. And there are people inside of public education, special education systems that are saying the same thing. Look, we are so good now at keeping those kids in the mainstream with adjustments in the mainstream that we need to really focus on teaching on our mainstream classroom teachers being better at special education. Then we can keep those kids in and not isolate them in resources rooms or self-contained classrooms for a learning disability. If those things can happen, maybe we back our way into full funding on the federal level.
My goodness. Well, I mean, it's just so complex when you think about it. I mean, this is why when you read something in the popular media, I can only imagine for parents where this is of specific interest and need that it's almost as if it's white noise, because there are so many different paths to go down and sort of almost redefining what the funding looks like, who should be eligible for that, and what the impact is on greater education, especially if they're going to pull in, to your point, they're going to pull in this population of students into the larger discussion of education, and then hence say, well, we can't afford another $20 billion. We've already got, X allocated already, and we're already sort of busting at the seams. So it's, think of anything, you've really supported that it is so confusing for these families, and that's part of the challenge, is making sure that everybody's up on where we are, what it means, and when it is political theater and or that there's actual movement.
Well, I think that it's going to go from a simmer to a boil as we move toward reauthorization, because really in the past dozen years since the work in the early 2000s of getting ready for the reauthorization in 2004 took place, Rod, we have learned so much about special education, neurological development. A lot of it is driven by autism and autism research. But concomitant with that is research in other neurodevelopmental issues besides autism that challenge special education as being up to the ability to really do what it intended to do, what it wants to do. It really is, in large measure, Rod, of kind of a movement of lots of special education needs into the medical front, away from education, and saying, gosh, if we really know so much more than we knew 40 years ago when we created the special education law, that if we can apply that to these kids, they will have a far better trajectory in their life. The challenge is, though, these are very, very medical oriented and scientifically oriented skills and knowledge sets that aren't manifested in our teacher training programs. And that's one of the reasons that I think that special education, particularly for those children at the deeper end of the pool, is going to become much more of a shared responsibility with medicine in order to enhance those children's lives. And it's the children with autism that have really brought this possibility, or not possibility, but brought this reality into the forefront in my thinking and my research.
Yeah, I would agree with you that that's definitely attitude, and we see it in the shows that we watch, the movies that we see, that it's becoming a much more commonplace to have the discussion and to understand these wonderful children and their families in so many different ways. Well, John, once again, I've learned a lot, and you've reframed it for me, especially when we're looking at this political theater. That's going to stick out for me. John, I've enjoyed it.
Thank you a lot, Rod. I always enjoy our conversations. Take care.
Join us for our next cup of coffee as we continue to have conversations in education that matter to you. I'm Dr. Rod Berger, and this is Coffee.